Awesome reading. Thank you so much, Daryl. I'm reminded of Hazar Anayat Khan, who talked a lot about self-pity as a bottomless pit, you know. You go down there and it's hard to get out. So I thought we'd start here with a little devotional singing. Om Namah Shivaya. What in the world does that have to do with us? I'm going to read a quote from Krishnamurti. In oneself lies the whole world, and if you know how to look and learn, the door is there and the key is in your hand. Nobody on earth can give you either the key or the door to open, except yourself. So in the Hindu tradition, a Shiva, the Nataraj that you often see statues of, who's in constant movement and standing on a rat, which symbolizes the ego, is completely at peace. If you look at the face, is always the vision of peace. Shiva is the knower of all the worlds. And his consort, Shakti, is everything that's known. You know, so Shakti is all of this, and you are Shiva, the knower. So let's just invoke that a little bit, okay? Namah Shivaya. Oh. Thank you, guys. Very good. It's an honor to be with you this morning and to take up one of our Dharma talks this month, looking at exactly what Daryl was reading about there, the ways we can become caught up in the world and moved out of our center by apparent events and things that grab us. I'm going to sneak up on this subject because we can talk about it as an academic kind of subject, psychologically, or from the point of view of theology, different perspectives. But I'd like to come at it from a different perspective altogether, which is proceeding from what we were just singing about. What is this? Who am I? And how shall I live? Just starting at the very, very beginning with that. So, you know, the non-dual perspective is in many different traditions. Vedanta, Tantra, Sufism, Buddhism, and it all begins with this one fact. Reality is one. Reality is one. This is immediately presents a problem for the mind, the finite mind, because the mind is like all the king's horses and all the king's men trying to put Humpty Dumpty together again, because we've fragmented it. We fragment the world into these pieces, and then we believe that unity or oneness is about somehow reassembling it all. Here's the Shantanand Saraswati of India, famous sage who died last century. If you begin to be what you are, you will realize everything. But to begin to be what you are, you must come out of what you are not. You are not those thoughts which are turning in your mind. You are not those changing feelings. You are not the different decisions you make and the different wills you have. You are not the separate ego. Well then, what are you? You will find when you come out of what you are not, that the ripple on the water is whispering to you, I am that. The birds in the trees are singing to you, I am that. The moon and the stars are shining beacons to you, I am that. You are everything in the world, and everything in the world is reflected in you, and at the same time, you are that. Everything. So, if I put the question to you, are you aware? And you look to see, yeah, I'm aware, right? Would everybody raise their hand if you know you're aware? Yeah, right? It's the simplest thing in the world, you know, being aware of being aware. It's not hard. It's not esoteric. It's easy. The paradigm, however, that we're operating in is that awareness appears to a self that's inside this body, that puts me in touch with a world out there made of matter, right? And this is the view that's reinforced from our earliest memories, isn't it? So we're not really taught about being aware of being aware because we're focused on objects all the time. We reach toward thoughts, feelings, sensations, perceptions, images. And in spirituality, many of the practices, such as mantra meditation or devotional singing or dancing or many of the things we might do, are also focused on objects. Prayer. And this is indeed the highest aspiration or stance that the person part of us could have, is to be in relationship to this mystery in a manner of devotion and surrender. But sooner or later, somewhere along the way, we may ask the question, well, if God is omnipotent, omnipresent, all-pervading, is that one not already here? Or if I'm engaged in devotion, longing and longing for that one, is not love not already here? So we're starting to realize that perhaps there's another approach or another understanding emerging. And that's sometimes called the direct path of just looking at who am I? Who is the knower of this experience? It's a process that's sometimes called sinking the mind into the heart. Rather than focusing on objects, we relax attention, relax that reaching toward our experience, and sink back into the knower, the knowing. And in previous talks here I've given at CSL, I've noted, Hazrat Nayak Khan says, the soul sees all but can't see itself. You'll never find that knower as an object in your awareness. But you're in there. We all just proved it. We looked and saw with the light of our own knowing, just like the sun doesn't need any light to see itself. It's self-illumined. That's what we are. So that sinking the mind and the heart is just coming back into the knowing of this and staying there. That would be the practice in meditation. What do we call this inner understanding that Krishnamurti was talking about, that the whole world is within you? Rumi called it the clear bead at the center. He said, the clear bead at the center changes everything. There's no edges to my loving now. The Buddhists call it the jewel in the heart of the lotus. The Sufis call it the mirror of the heart. Beauty is eternity, gazing in the mirror. Yajamil, yajamil. The sages of old wisely called it not to, not to, Advaita, in order that it never be made an object in awareness, because it can't possibly be. You can only be that. You can't find it with the mind. And this is one of the great confusing things about this kind of teaching, where we can only describe this clear bead in the center, which is this right here, right now appearing to you closer than your jugular vein, as it was said about Allah. What could be closer than your jugular vein? Your actual experience right here, this right now. Thoughts, feelings, sensations, perceptions, all of it arising as a limitless, seamless, intimate, constant, never-changing fact, appearing where? Nowhere. It's within, wherever that is. And it's the only experience that absolutely everybody on the planet has, is that knowing of their experience. So, one of my favorite Sufi texts lately is by this guy named Balyani, who was a colleague of Ibn Arabi in the 14th century. He wrote a piece called Know Thyself, an essay. I'll be reading a little bit of it. He says, abandon the intellect and understand by the light of unveiling. If you catch what I'm talking about, it's like you've seen that silhouette of a vase, but if you look at it differently, it's two faces. That's revelation. That's suddenly you're looking at exactly the same thing, but oh my gosh, it's been right under my nose all the time. It's like that. This is not hard. It's not esoteric. Enlightenment comes to us through the Eastern traditions, which are shrouded in all this mystique and practices and asceticism. You've got to go through great gnashing of teeth to understand this stuff. The understanding of it is very simple, but coming out of what you are not takes a little time and requires consistency, sincerity, and a great deal of attention. Why? Because along the way, we have picked up some debris in our I am, our sense of I am aware. It's I am this, I am that, I have this wounding, I have this self-pity. All of that stuff is an error, nobody's fault, but we have to take responsibility for it in order to come out of what we are not. And we take responsibility by becoming the one that we are over and over again. And each time we come back to our pure awareness in any given situation, that is a victory. And it becomes a little easier the next time. So this means bringing the body and repetitive thoughts as well into alignment with this understanding that I'm talking about, this clear bead at the center, is you. It's not appearing to you as a person, my experience. This is what I am experiencing it. That is true, but it's not true in the way that you believed it to be. This is what I'm trying to, the point I'm trying to make. It's arising in your awareness, which is that by which everything is known, that in which everything arises, and that of which everything is made. And that's what Krishnamurti was talking about, is that this right here is made of your awareness. It's rendering this within you, and that is what you are. So bringing our self into alignment with this means allowing the density in our being to be rooted up by this understanding. And that means in meditation, taking a very spacious and open and loving stance in that seat of awareness and remaining there, no matter what happens, no matter what comes up. Because decades of repetitive thinking, I don't know if you follow Joe Dispenza, my wife and I find his teachings fascinating, but he's doing all this medical research around healing that happens to people who meditate. And, you know, it's like the body gets conditioned by our thinking. Thinking releases certain chemicals. It has every single thought has a chemical and a enzyme impact on the body. And after decades of this, the body is like, you know, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm driving to work and I'm angry. You know, that's its program. If you're going to come out of that, you have to start taking responsibility for it, bringing a different kind of emotion to that, and above all, being aware of it. And if you have trauma in your background, like I do, it's even more challenging. Also, resistance and seeking, which I've talked about here before, those are things which bring us out of present time awareness. As soon as we say, I don't like it, whatever's happening, and as soon as we say, I don't like it, this whole process just blossoms again. The separate self, matter, mind, division, duality. Or if we're seeking, there has to be a better moment than this one. I'll find it. So if we look again in our direct experience and allow it to lay bare the reality before us, we start to come into an understanding of who we really are. This is Balyani. You thought you were you, but you are not you and never were. For if you were you, you would be a lord and the second of two. Stop what you are thinking. Between his being and your being, there is no difference. He is no different from you, not you from him. If you say in ignorance you are other, you are stubborn. But if your ignorance disappears, you are submissive. For your union is separation. Your separation, union, and your distance is closeness. Though through that you become suitable. Abandon the intellect and understand by the light of unveiling. So, what he's talking about there is the strength, the capacity, the peace, happiness, the love that automatically arises when you come out of what you are not, because you are coming back to yourself, which is the only self there is. You are that and nothing else. There isn't any other being than you, and we're all you. We're all that. Here's how Hazrat Nayak Khan described it. I first believed without hesitation in the existence of the soul, and then I wondered about the secret of its nature. I persevered and strove in search of the soul and found at last that I myself was the cover over my own soul. I realized that that in me which believed and that in me which wondered and that which was found at last was no other than my soul. I thanked the darkness that brought me to the light, and I valued this veil that prepared me for the vision in which I saw myself reflected, the vision produced in the mirror of my soul. And what bewilderment it was when I realized that I alone was, if there were anyone, that I am whatever and whoever exists, and that I shall be whoever there will be in the future. So Jesus wasn't kidding when he said, love your neighbor as yourself, because that is who they are. Why is this so hard to get after 2,000 years? So here's another thing about duality. We're taught that there's this stuff called matter that came out of a Big Bang and that somehow gave rise to life, that somehow gave rise to human beings, that somehow gave rise to consciousness, which somehow gave rise to you and me as the knower. So, see, we're proceeding from something no one has ever seen called matter, and somehow extrapolating to this world of separation, where we're all Alka-Seltzers fizzing at each other. And then we tell people, go out, young people, go out in the world and, you know, be happy, be at one with your life. That's how we get the world we see. Rather than starting with the one thing that we all share in common, awareness, and arrive at the world. The whole world is within you if you have the eyes to see, and the key is in your hand. There is no matter, no things, no other persons in being. The world that we see and know is an emanation of that, not separate objects made of matter as we were taught. Just soften your focus a little bit. It's like looking at a movie where everything seems so real, including you in the movie, having emotions and feelings and all that. But underneath the movie is the screen, awareness. And that's where it's all happening, folks. That's where it's all happening. And science is actually starting to catch up with this. We keep splitting more and more atoms. I saw they're going to build another collider, try to get that last particle that we're missing. We're kind of playing with ourselves. It's ourself, you know? So here's some things. If we want to approach this understanding and start to live it, here are a few things you might want to keep in mind. One is, Pema Chodron, you're all sky, the rest, it's just the weather. I gave a whole talk on that one time here. Hold to that no matter what. Make pure awareness your true body. It's always the same and completely untouched by anything that ever appears in it, that ever happens. And it has a different destiny than the body or the mind. Be aware of being aware. And notice if you start to resist anything. If you start to get all steamed up about politics or something like that, just remember what Krishnamurti said. My secret teaching is I don't mind what happens. Find out what it means to put that into practice. If you catch yourself minding what is happening, offer that up to your pure awareness. Allow a tiny crack in the door for the possibility that your real self truly doesn't mind what is happening. Try it and see what happens. Give yourself to that kind of freedom, the freedom that you may remember from being a child on the playground, where everything was just perfect. That's the kind of life we're meant to have, because that is what we are. A third sort of takeaway, let other people be who they are. Until we grant others complete freedom to be who they are, we're in bondage to that without realizing. Anayat Khan, I have seen all souls as my soul and realized my soul as the soul of all. I had a Sufi student say to me recently, That frightens me. Well, it's honest. That's cool. Say, good. You know, this is the kind of stuff that comes up because we've all been protecting ourselves from the truth. The truth burns, but in the end, it liberates. That's my experience. Another takeaway, practice gratefulness. Hazrat Naik Khan, I thanked the darkness that brought me to the light. Can we be grateful for this whole amazing setup here, including my resistance to it? I was a little confused, but as I come out of it, all that energy that was tied up in deficiency, self-absorption, self-pity gets released, and it becomes part of one's undivided energy. And it's a real charge into the heart and the mind of possibility. Live as the unknown. Your real self always knows how to meet every situation, especially if your heart's on board. And when we're not burdened with beliefs, identifications, and making demands on life, have no expectations and just be happy. And this would be the last one. Make your own happiness uncaused and unconditional. This includes in our relationships. Every one of us should say to our intimate partner, I love you, but I don't need you. That's the most beautiful and loving thing we could ever say to someone. Because we have let go of making demands on another to provide our happiness. And this frees us up to be who we eternally are and will be whoever comes along next, as Naik Khan says. In being, all needs are already met. This is the kind of understanding that can be hard won as we bring our bodies and vehicles into alignment with what I'm talking about, which is coming out of what you are not. I don't want to minimize the intensity of that. If we're sitting with a difficult emotion of I don't like it, that can be intense. But if we're holding to who we really are in love, it's a victory already. And next time it'll be easier. So Balyani concludes his essay on Know Thyself with this. My essence is really his essence, without lack or imperfection. There is no otherness between them, and myself is the place where the invisible appears. I received a gift overflowing without any giving or intermingling. Myself did not vanish in him, nor does the one who vanished remain. I love that. I love that. What a statement of realization. Myself did not vanish in him, nor does the one who vanished remain, because that one I thought I was is a complete phantom, made of him. Excuse the male language. It doesn't mean anything. So those last two lines are a stupendous expression of unveiling or revelation. One sees that the suffering and sorrow of the separate self was always just a case of mistaken identity. In hindsight, there never was two and a separate self, God and a separate self. The separate self was just a phantom shadow that vanished in the light of the sun. So the clear bead at the center changes everything, as Rumi said, including beginning a life lived from the unlimited. Thank you.